What's up, everybody? This is the MMA Talk Show second episode. I'm really happy to have you on today because we're going to have a good episode where we are going to recap both BFL events that took place before last weekend on Thursday and Friday. It was really cool to have back-to-back events for BFL, and they really delivered. I'm going to recap all these fights, all the things that happened at these events, and then we are going to speak to two people who have made their pro debuts on the last BTC card. Nate Small, who won against Amir Bani in a good back-and-forth contest. That was a really good fight, and they're both going to be in the Bantamweight tournament for BTC 13. So it wasn't announced yet, but we talk about it a little bit with Nate Small. So good interview with Nate Small, and then we speak to Jean-Luc Harrison, who also won his first pro fight on that BTC card. So two cool guests this week for you guys. But before that, we need to talk about these BFL events, and starting with BFL 68 that took place on September 30, Thursday, and it was a good card, six professional fights. I'm not going to touch on the amateur fights because they weren't on Fight Pass, and I'm not in BC, so I haven't seen them, and I don't have much to say about fights that I haven't seen. So we're going to talk about the professional fights that were on these cards, six on each card, and BFL 68 really delivered. It was one of the best events we've seen this year. And we're going to start with the main event of the evening for the BFL Bantamweight Championship, Sari City, Gio Platon. And, you know, BFL, they got their prospects that they really single out from the amateur scene that fight for them amateur, and they really single them out as this guy's going to be a good pro prospect. And Gio Platon really felt like one of these guys, and I get why. This guy's super aggressive, super exciting with the striking. He finished his two first fights in like merely seconds both time. He's really aggressive. He's really powerful with his punches, explosive. He's a good prospect. I know when you see him fight, you get it why they want to push that guy. He's super talented. He's good. And he really had a stiff fight in front of him in Sari City, a guy who was 4-1, so more than double his experience. And his lone loss was to Matteo Vogel, where he was like fairly competitive in that fight. So I feel like Sari City really came in with an edge and experience. And to be honest, it showed, because Gio, of course, started the fight super aggressive, was landing combinations, was finishing his combination with leg kicks. And I feel like Sari clearly wasn't very fazed by that, but he had to address it. He was laying back a little bit, trying to find a way to figure out the aggression of Gio. And Gio, not even 30 seconds into the fight, just shot for a takedown and landed it. But as soon as it touched the ground, you can see that Sari wanted a triangle. The first thing he did was control the wrist. He was trying to control the wrist and try to frame on it and push the wrist to, you know, set up a triangle. That's how you do it. And like, I feel like Gio had to know. He had to know that Sari was looking for a triangle, and he didn't really address it during the setup. And Sari just went on with the move, and Gio still did not address the move. And I feel like that's a rookie mistake on his part, that he's going to have to learn from that, because, you know, he felt like he was super confident. And when the triangle began to be locked in, he postured up a little bit and continued striking. And I felt like he believed that just by hitting that guy in the face and by keeping a good enough posture, he was going to prevent him from locking in the triangle any further, and then he was going to be able to defend it. But like, that's not addressing a submission. That's keep being offensive but not defending the submission. And I feel like a guy like Sari City, who's got more experience than you and who's a really good grappler, and he's got really long limbs to really long legs. So Gio, he had to address the move. He had to defend the move, then continue on with his attack. But even in the triangle, he just tried to posture a little bit, keep doing some hammer fists, and that's not working, man. You need to defend the move. He did not defend the move, so Sari was able to keep working with his leg to tighten the grip, move at an angle to get a better angle on the choke, and he was able to do all that without Gio really doing nothing, because he was trying to strike and to posture. And finally, the triangle got locked up, and Sari won the fight, won the belt. He's now the BFL Bantamweight champion, and they're probably looking to rebook the fight between him and Ali Wazouk, which is going to be a really good fight, I feel, because Sari just showed us that dangerous guy from his back. He's got a good submission game, and Ali is also a good grappler who wants to take the fight down and go on top and do some damage there and do all his stuff from there. So it's going to be a good matchup. But as for that fight, I feel like Gio could and probably will learn a lot from that loss, because, you know, He didn't take his time to address the move and then move on with his offense. You can't let a guy do his thing and just not address it and be confident, oh no, he's not going to catch me in that move and just not defend the move. He's going to, if he's a good guy, he's a good triangle guy, he's not going to let it go. He's going to complete it. And that's what Siri did. And all the props to him. He's the champ. He's the guy that we're going to want to see move on with that belt and with his winning record. He's a really good prospect, man. When I told you last year or the year before, I don't know, it's not last year, it was pandemic, but when he fought Matteo Vogel, I told you two of the finest 135-pound prospects in Canada. And when we saw that fight, yeah, Matteo won, but we clearly see that these two guys had immense potential and Siri's living up to it right now. And as for Gio, it's a setback that's only going to make him better, man. I feel like I said he made a rookie mistake in that one. He's not going to do this in the future, I'm pretty sure. And as we've been seeing, that fight started pretty good for him. I'm not saying he did some damage and was on the fringe of a finishing Siri, none like that. But he had a good start, good aggressive start. He knows what to do in the cage, super explosive, super. This guy's got a big upside, lots of potential, and he's going to learn from that one. But unfortunately for him, it wasn't his night. Then, it wasn't Austin Batra's night in the co-main event either, man. He tried to take down the Omi Christian Tremaine. It did not work. And when Christian Tremaine decided that it was time to grapple with him, oh my God, it did not go well. He took his back really easily. He was able to flatten him and land some major ground and pound and try for the choke. And Austin was able to defend it. But in the end, Christian Tremaine kept on going with the ground and pound and got the TKO mid first round, but like super dominant. Dominant performance. There was like pretty much no question from the beginning to the end of that fight who was in control, who was in the lead. It was Christian Tremaine. I know that it was kind of a grudge match. I know that there was some back and forth between those two guys, but once they got locked up inside the cage, man, there was absolutely no doubt who was the better man. It was Christian Tremaine all the way in that fight. That's it. Major performance for him. I can't wait to see what's in the future for him. I just want to see him active. It had been a long time since we've seen Christian Tremaine fight, and we kind of had forgotten how good he was, how fun he was, how aggressive and how like powerful he does damage, and he's really good on the ground and all that stuff. So I just can't wait to see him fight again. This guy's pretty good, and I feel like if he can be active, he can build up a pretty good record in that division and be a guy that could challenge for a belt and that could be into some big Canadian fights in the near future. So big shout out to him. And then before that, good fight between John Nguyen, Josh Kwiatkowski. I feel like there was just a gap in the striking in that fight. John Nguyen was able to be the longer fighter, land his jab, land the better shots in that fight. And I feel like more as the fight kept on going, he was getting more and more into his rhythm. He was feeling himself a little more, and he was able to be looser, which he seemed not a little tense in the beginning of the fight, but like, kept on a slower pace and really wanted to establish his reads, establish everything he needed to know on Josh Kwiatkowski. And when he knew all of that, just turned up the volume a notch, turned up the aggression a notch, and he was able to secure a highlight reel KO in the end because he landed a spinning back kick head first. And of course, he didn't knock out Josh Kwiatkowski with that because Josh Kwiatkowski is super tough and he's got one of the best chins in the division. So of course, he just didn't go down that way. And when at the just jump in and gets to some more ground and pound and some more offense before the referee stopped the fight. But man, Kwiatkowski, like, he wasn't just going to go out on a straight up head kick like that, man. Are you crazy? This guy's way too tough for that. But it's almost incredible how he didn't go out on that because the kick was amazing and flush and one of the better knockouts we've seen this year. So big props to John Nguyen. He's back into the winner's column after a loss to Mike McCallum that we're going to talk about in a little time. But good job to Josh Kwiatkowski. It's a little tougher year for him, just lost two in a row. I know his fight with Neufeld was really competitive, too, one of the better fights this year. This one, again, was a good fight, but fortunately for him, not able to get the job done in those fights. So it's back to the drawing board for him and for Nguyen. Man, if he can just come on and spinning kick guys, it's gonna be pretty fun. Speaking about pretty fun, Bobby Poulter, man, wow, damn, this guy, Keenan Keller was looking like not the better striker, but the more like flowy striker that's gonna stay at range and use some like a large variety of kicks. This guy was landing leg kicks, body kicks, was trying plenty different techniques with his feet, and I was having the feeling that Poulter, if he was gonna get the distance close, was going to have some success in that fight. But it was going to be a tough job to do this, honestly, because Keenan Keller is a pretty good striker, good range striker, and he had the reach advantage in that fight. So I felt like that was the tough thing to do for Bobby Poulter. But once he was able to figure it out and just landed like a massive over and right, absolutely sat Keenan Keller down. And that's a one-punch knockout, to be honest. That's a one-punch knockout. An amazing performance for Bobby Poulter. Poulter now moves up to 3-0, and he was already a guy at 170 that we were looking at him in Eastern Canada and Ontario and Quebec. We were looking at him as a guy to watch, a good prospect from Aegis MMA that cross trains with a lot of guys at all these gyms in the Greater Toronto area/ Niagara Falls. They all train pretty much together back there. And Poulter, with all these guys like Lyndon Whitlock in his corner, you know that he's coming really prepared. And super performance for him. 1 minute, 18 seconds to get the one punch knockout. That's going to be a big one. And man, approaching a title shot is Bobby Poulter. I feel like he's still early in his career. For BFL, it's tough because you got to go and fight Dayon, who's like got many fights and super good. But Bobby Poulter, add this name to the list of names that you're watching, because he's a really good Canadian prospect. And then, oh my god, that was a stupid fight, man. Mitch Strzella and Glenn Cuevas. I didn't know these guys because I'm really far away. I don't really see the amateur fights back in BC. So I didn't know these guys. I was like, oh, two pro debuts. They look pretty cool. And then the fight started and you got Strzella coming in with the combos and the body shots. And I was like, oh my god, this guy's so good. And then Cuevas looking like he's kind of phased by it, but more and more that the round is advancing, more that you can see Cuevas get into his rhythm and not be as phased by what Strzella is doing. And he starts answering, and when he answers, he's landing flush, and Strzella is just eating in and throwing back, and he's landing flush too. And like, they're both landing flush on each other with good boxing techniques, good kickboxing techniques. And then the second round comes around and you see Cuevas making the adjustment, and now he's winning, and he cut his opponent wide open. I don't know if it's with a close-up elbow or with a big punch, because there were many highlights in the second round too. And it's just an amazing back-and-forth fight. And now you got Cuevas winning and you're like, oh my god, what's happening? And then third round comes around and Strzella just comes out with a jab and body kicks and jabs and body kicks. And he just turns it around again. Another momentum swing in that fight. And it ends up on the ground and Strzella's having a good time on the ground. And just he can't finish each other. They're just too good. Both are too good. They're just too good for pro beginners. They're absolutely amazing. That was an amazing fight, man. Probably, oh man, I feel like you've got, right now in Canada, you've got three contenders for Fight of the Year. You've got this one, Strzella Cuevas. You've got the Nate Small, Amir Bani fight at BTC. And the other one for me is Jordan Erosa on the UFC card. That were the three better fights that we've seen this year, I feel, in Canada. And man, this one was just, wow. Absolutely amazing. And yes, Strzella won the decision, but Glenn Cuevas is incredible too, man. I feel like he maybe lost his first pro fight, but I don't see him going around and losing too many other fights. This guy's very, very good. Strzella too. Major props to both of these guys. That was an amazing fight. And the first fight was really good too. Really not as technical. Like when you look at it, you can tell first fight super exciting, yeah, back and forth, yeah, for sure. Not as technical as the Strzella Cuevas fight, but it was still a good fight. Terrence Jeffers, Harris, CFL veteran, making his pro MMA debut against James Foster, who had like five pro fights and 500 amateur fights. I'm joking around, but like I think 16 to 20 amateur fights. This guy was super experienced and came on strong in the first round. You could see that Terrence Jeffers Harris was the more explosive, more athletic guy, of course, a former football player for the CFL. And when he was able to keep it at range and land his jab and keep it boxing, keep his boxing clean, keep it at a range boxing fight. He was able to have the upper end, but as soon as James Foster was able to close in, it became a dirty fight, and he was able to land some shots, and he dropped him, I'd say, two times in the first round. There was another time that, yeah, maybe it's a knockdown, maybe it's more of a slip, but let's say just multiple times. James Foster was able to drop Terrence Jeffers Harris multiple times in the first round, and I did pretty much everything he could to finish him, just wasn't able. Harris was too tough. Jeffers Harris was too tough, was not going to be finished in that fight. And when the second round came around, you could see that Jeffers Harris, even though he was a guy that that ate the most damage, basically, in that fight, he was the fresher fighter of the two. And he was able, man, to get the upper hand in that fight and keep on pushing and ultimately get the TKO at 2 minutes, 2 seconds of the second round in a fight that, man, it's a good comeback win for him in his pro fight to get tested like that in your first pro round, to get dropped multiple times and just come back and not care and be able to get the finish. That's a huge feat in his first pro fight. So shouts out to Terrence Jeffers Harris. Really tough, good performance. And as for James Foster, this guy is just always bringing it, man. He's not going to win them all. As we've seen with his record, he's now 2-3 with a draw. So he's not going to win them all. But when he comes, you know that he's going to bring the fight. And he's a really exciting fighter, really crafty, older fighter, I'd say. Not a guy that is on the short list of guys that are going to make the UFC because he's old and he doesn't have a really good record. But, man, he's going to just bring the heat every time he fights, and we need guys like this to test the younger prospects, because have you seen really tested Terrence Jeffers Harris? You not only learned that Terrence Jeffers Harris was able to win as a pro in MMA, but also to get tested and still win. So we learned a lot from that fight. I really appreciate it. And that leaves us to the next day, BFL 69. Wasn't as good as a card as a BFL 68. It was still a good event, to be honest. I'm not the bitching around or nothing. It was a good event. But after the things that we saw the night before, the Mitch Strazella, Glenn Cuevas fight, the Bobby Poulter knockout, the Nguyen knockout, the Tremaine domination, the City Triangle, like, we've seen a lot of highlights on that BFL 68 card. So the BFL 69 had a lot of hype to live up to, and it didn't quite live up to it. It was a good event, didn't quite live up to it. And, like, I don't know, I don't want to put the blame on the main event, but, man, I kind of have to do it because, and it's not like, you know, when there's a situation like that where it's really nobody's fault. Like, it's not BFL's fault. I know they tried everything to have people fight Kai Machado, and nobody wants to fight that guy. And the guy that they found out was a guy in the United States who had a losing record, not a good record at all, but he had a lot of fights. And he's going to come in, and he's going to test Machado for sure because he's experimented and all that. But unfortunately, the guy had his second COVID shot, but you need to have the second shot for at least 14 days before it's fully efficient. So it wasn't 14 days until his second shot, so he wasn't fully protected. So he, according to the commission, to the laws, the COVID restrictions, he couldn't be licensed for that fight, basically. So it fell through, and Lee Mayne's fight fell through also. And they were like, oh, man, nah. I'm pretty sure they did. Oh, no, not that fight again. It was a good fight the first time. And to be quite honest, it was a good time. It was a good fight the second time around, too. It's just that, man, we kind of had seen the results. And, like, with Kai Machado, you want to learn stuff about him. Like, this guy's that close to the UFC. And I feel like not only we didn't learn nothing, because it's almost like we had the same fight. Let's just say like that. We had the same fight. Machado came crashing. He was like, I'm finishing that guy right now. Don't give a single shit. He's going to be done in 15 seconds. I'm going to knock that guy out. And then he didn't go out in 16 seconds. And Lee Mayne started popping him back. And he landed a couple of shots. And Machado was like, oh, okay. So I need to be a little more serious about it. And, like, maybe be a little more careful, because I don't have to get knocked out by that guy. That can't happen to me right now. So he just toned it down a little bit. Was able to still beat the shit out of him, basically. But Mayne is one of the toughest guy around, and he's not going to go out without a fight. And that's what he did. And then it ended up on the ground, and Machado was able to get a full mount, and he was punching. And then you just saw Lee Mayne rise up. And for a small split second, I was like, man, He's just going to sweep him, man. He's just going to pose like that, give the armbar and fucking sweep him. But no, Machado, I seen it come into and he just armbarred him. That was it. And man, props to Kai. Props to him. Nobody wants to fight that guy. And he's still there and he's taking. Like, he could have said no to that fight. He's not, like, he's basically not winning anything from fighting Li Meng again. Like, we know what happened the first time. It's probably going to happen the second time around. And if you do any less, well, like, it's a failure. It's basically you didn't do as good as the first time around. So there's basically no win for Machado. Because if the UFC looks at this and it's like, man, you just beat that guy two times in a year. He's got a losing record. Yeah, they know Jordan Mean. They know there is he's his dad. They know all of that. But I don't feel like the UFC is really taking the time to look at each of these fights and each of these fighters. And sometimes there's fighters that have records that are not as good as you would wish. And that makes it tough for the UFC because Li Meng's pretty good. He's a good fighter. But if you just look at his record and look at his last fight, you're not really going to see that in this record. You need to look at him and see him fight to witness this. And I feel like that's maybe the part that the UFC is missing. So for Kai, it's how does this improve his standing regarding to being one of the next guy being signed to the UFC? Fortunately enough for him, he's there. Like, he's already one of the next guy that is going to get signed to the UFC. So that doesn't decrease his standing whatsoever, but it's not improving his standing either. And like, man, if they didn't sign him after his last fight, I don't know if they're going to sign him after this fight. And like, this guy really needs to move on, really needs to go fight somewhere else, because basically with all these COVID restrictions and stuff, we can't find people to fight him here. There's nobody in Canada. He already beat Christian Larsen. And as we may have seen, we're not even really able to bring some people from outside. And even the guy that they were going to bring, I never saw him fight, but didn't have the good record and stuff. It was almost like Li Meng in terms of records. So, man, it's just sad for Kai. What are you going to do? It's tough position for him until he gets signed. And I really hope he gets signed as soon as possible because, man, you shouldn't be here fighting these people. And big props to Li Meng, probably the only winner, even though he lost. I know he didn't want to lose, but we saw the result in the first fight. It's tough to believe that it was going to go different the second time around. But Li Meng doesn't give a single shit about that. He's a fighter and he's going to fight. And he fought, and props to him. He took the fight, saved the day. We had a Kai Machado fight, and that's probably the only thing we can say about that, to be quite honest. Then, ah, man, Nicolò Ouellet, man, that fucking guy, I can't believe my eyes, man. This guy is absolutely incredible. Like, absolutely incredible. He's so big, explosive, strong. When he hits you, it seems to hurt so much. And then you're like, fuck, he's hitting me. I need to take him down. I need to take his ass down so he stops hitting me. And then you try to take him down and you just realize that he's a better grappler than striker. So fuck. You don't want to be on the ground with him too. So it's like, pick your poison, man. This guy's going to hurt you anywhere you are. And man, Mike McCallum, this guy, he lost his first pro fight, went away like in another country to fight a guy that was 11-1 while he was 0-0. And he went on and lost that fight and came back to Canada and beat everybody except for Michael Imperato, who's, man, a guy that was supposed to be signed with the UFC at some point, and he lost by decision. So Mike McCallum is just not a guy who gets choked out in the first round, especially choked out because he's a grappler. He's a jiu-jitsu guy. He's winning by submission or trying to out-grapple his opponent. And if he gets against Michael Imperato, who's more experienced than him, then he loses by a small margin, but he lost. But it was very, very competitive with one of the best bantamweights in Canada for the last decade, let's say so. And Imperato was a real good fighter. And then Nicolò Ouellet just comes in and fucking ruins him and chokes him out in the very first round. Like, it's really, like, it's nothing. Like, it's easy. Like, you can do that to Mike McCallum. There's nothing there. It's normal. It's everyday stuff. And this guy's amazing. I need to talk to him. I need to have him on the podcast. I'll message him because this guy, man, wow, I'm super impressed. By far, the rookie of the year. I feel like before these events, it was between him and Gio Platon. After that event, man, I got no doubt. Nicolò Ouellet. Nicolò Ouellet, the most French name out there, man. Shout out to that guy. He's absolutely amazing. I can't say enough good things. He's like, as much as Strezella and Cuevas are my revelations of the weekend, because I didn't know them, Nicolas Ouellet, I knew him. Like, I knew he was good. I saw him do what he did to my boy Kevin, but fuck, man, that guy's absolutely amazing, man. He's amazing. That's a serious prospect. Serious prospect. Then, Léo Xavier was back in the cage after a while. Last time he fought, it was for TKO. He lost a decision to Yassine Bandoui. Shouts out to my guy Yassine. It's been a while since I heard about him. But damn, was fighting with Rafael Palomeki, and that wasn't a fight, to be honest. Palomeki had absolutely nothing for Léo Xavier, and he was able to land a better strike, take him down at will, control him on the ground. To be honest, I kind of wish I saw a little more urgency from Xavier, and I'm not going to like blame it on him, because it was a while since he fought. Léo Xavier has been around for a while, and like, he's not one of the youngest guy on the roster and stuff, so for a guy who's on the older side of things, coming back after like 2017, that's almost 5 years. So I understand why he wasn't like really pushing for the finish, but that fight was so not a competitive fight that I feel like he could have pushed it a little bit more. But like I said, I'm not going to blame him for that one. He was inactive for a while, and he just came in, got the job done. Super dominant fight. But just before that, Austin Russell absolutely blew me away. That guy's amazing. And yes, the finish was super cool. The way he was able to land some big punches on Virk was super cool. But what it really impressed me was his takedown defense. You knew Virk was going to shoot. I don't think he even threw a punch in that fight. The first thing he done in that fight was to shoot. And Russell was super ready, was able to defend the takedowns. Had some amazing takedown defense, some amazing reactions to the wrestling and the chain wrestling of Super Singh. And it's absolutely deserved performance, deserved win for Austin Russell. He absolutely blew the roof off that place with his high elbow standing guillotine choke on Andrew Burke at 4 minutes 23 of the very first round. Not only defended the takedown, he lit him up on the feet and he fucking choked him. That was an amazing performance, and I can't wait to see Russell back in the cage. And Virk too, he's really good. But then, Johnny Broad, Kenny Pope, I don't really like to categorize a fighter after only 2 pro fights, but I feel like Johnny Broad's a slow starter, man. Because this guy is super good, like mini GSP, comes out with the gi. He looks like GSP, acts like GSP, he's super good. And you see that he kind of wants to fight like GSP, in the sense that, like, he's a cerebral fighter. He looks into getting his reads and looking at the tendencies and the patterns of his opponent. And when once he's read all that, he's able to decide what he's going to do, how he's going to approach the fight. And when he gets on, when he turns the machine on, this guy is amazing, man. He was really able to defeat a guy that was, look, a weight class and a half above him. Kenny Pope was huge in this fight. And first round, he was able to keep Johnny Broad at bay with his kicks, with his long strikes. And you could really see that Broad was having a tough time getting into the range. But more and more that the round advanced, more that you can see that Bro was getting more comfortable in that fight. And second round, he was really able to leap into the pocket with some strikes. A lot of Superman punches. I feel like the Superman punches were the first strikes that really landed for Broad, except, of course, for his leg kicks. When he started including some leg kicks into the mix, that's when he was really able to make Pope think and to be able to crash the pocket a little more. And once Broad got going, there was absolutely no doubt that he was going to win this fight. This guy is another one of the top prospects that you see BFL wanting to push to the next level. And like the Omi Geoplaton, I see why. I get why. This guy is really good. Like I said, maybe a bit of a slow starter, because we've seen in his 2 only pro fights that had a tougher time in round 1. But once he gets adjusted and he knows how he's going to approach the fight, there's really nothing stopping him. And not even a guy that looks like he's got like 30 pounds on him and fucking, I don't know how many inches in reach advantage, but that was significant, like really significant. And Broad was able to overcome that to get a late fight TKO win, 3rd round TKO win in that one. And man, I'm going to keep following. I'm a believer in mini GSP, so let's do it. I'm ready to see what's next for him. And then first fight, Gwynn Berry, Seth Connor. A good little back and forth. The Like the only, and it's not really a problem, but the only thing with that fight is that there were long periods where not much was happening. And that's because Seth Connor, the guy, I really like his style. He was pulling guard and he was going for some weird, like rubber guard stuff, some weird, like the boogie chokes and all that. You know, the weird side of jiu-jitsu, the one that I like really much. He was all in on that weird side of jiu-jitsu. And you know, Gwyn Berry, he was concerned about this a little bit because, you know, sometimes when you try to play that rubber guard, the guys, they just go crazy on you and they try to escape like really aggressively, really like fast. But Gwyn Berry knew that his opponent was good in that. And if he made a mistake and he was trying to do something too quick without really thinking what he was going to do, Seth Connor would have caught him. So Berry was able to stay composed, stay super calm with the help of his corner. You got to say a big, big props to his corner. We're really behind him and really vocal in the corner to tell him, stay there. Do not do anything stupid. You're good right now. You won the round previously to this, so you don't need to do anything stupid right now and get caught in the choke or a submission or a normal platter, a go-go platter, or anything you want to do with all these weird rubber guard techniques. So I got to give a big, big, big shout out to Gwyn Berry on that one. For a pro debutant, a guy that was making his pro debut, sometimes that's the type of fighters you see, like panic in these weird positions and do a bad move and just get submitted, get finished. And he didn't do that, was able to land the better strikes on the feet, was able to have the better moments in the fight in general. And when the fight went to the ground, yes, clearly he was in danger a lot of the time because Connor was super aggressive with his weird jiu-jitsu, but he was able to stay calm and composed and never really do, because in these rubber guards position and stuff, you're stuck. So it's kind of the guy wants to make you do something stupid and then he capitalizes on that. Gwyn Berry never gave him the chance to capitalize and was able to get the decision, get the win. So good, good pro debut for Gwyn Berry. You got to be happy about that if you're M. And that's it for my recaps. BFL 69, really good event. BFL 68, even better event. Absolutely explosive from front to end event. We had a really good time watching these two cars on Thursday and Friday, and I can't wait to see what's next with BFL because, man, they've really stepped their game up, and they're really in right now. I can say that there's not a promotion in Canada that can say, oh, yeah, I'm as good as BFL. There's Unified there. They're really good too, but right now the top promotion in Canada is BFL. They're able to put on some back-to-back shows and two really good cards with really good action. And even for the 69 card, which it wasn't as explosive, we saw some like really good things, like Leo Xavier, super dominant, happy to have him back. He's a mainstay in that division. Same thing for Gwyn Berry, maybe not the most exciting fight, but he showed so much maturity, so much things that we can look forward to the future and say that this guy is going to be a good fighter because of what we saw in that fight. So really excited for the future. That was my recap. And now I'm going to let you listen to the interviews this week. Nate Small and then Jean-Luc Harrison. So good podcast to everybody. We're back and we've got the big homie Nate Small in this bitch. What's up, Nate? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing super great too. I just wanted to know, how are you feeling, man? First pro fight at BTC 12. Finally had the chance to make your pro debut. Was one hell of a fight, man. Like probably one of the best fights on the Canadian circuit this year. So I just wanted to know, how do you feel after this fight and this first pro win?
Yeah, man. I feel good. I feel good. A little sore. You can see my eye. My eye's a little bruised. He got me a couple times in my eye, but other than that, I feel great. Fight was a good fight. He put up a scrap, but I had to come out, show him how to grapple.
Yeah, for sure, man. That was probably one of the main thing about that fight, because I don't really know you guys. I'm from Quebec, okay? I'm from very far in Quebec. And I wanted to come down to these fights. And when I got there, I knew Amir was fighting for Niagara Top Team. It's kind of a well-known gym and stuff. And people were telling me, oh, you see, this guy is a really good grappler. He's a really good grappler. He's going to bring the fight to the ground. He's going to do his stuff. And, man, every time the fight went to the ground, either you swept him or, like, you defended a submission attempt. And you always, always ended up on top. Like in the grappling department in that fight, you always ended up on top position with the best position, the best things that were happening. So was that a surprise for you? Because I feel like people were saying, I think Nate's maybe the best striker. Amir's maybe the best grappler in that fight. And I feel like you really, really proved that your grappling was amazing in that fight.
Yeah. The grappling I'm getting right now at my gym, Mafa, it's pretty high level. Like my grappling coach, Justin, he showed me a lot of new techniques that I didn't know before when I was fighting amateur. So a lot of the techniques really helped me and just opened my eyes to a lot. Like, man, I knew going into the fight, Amir had good grappling. But at the same time, I knew I had good grappling too. And I knew that if I got on top, it wasn't he wouldn't be able to do anything, you know. So as it is what it is, but I had fun fighting.
Yeah, man. The things that I really like to see is really when people get to do techniques that, like, they're good, they work, but sometimes they work more in jiu-jitsu than MMA. And you just landed that sweep with holding both legs, and you just had your legs, and you push with the hips, like really basic jiu-jitsu sweep that, like, we all see in our first classes. And sometimes it doesn't work like that, and you just, like, pulled it through in that fight. Worked out really well. And like I said, every time you had the chance, you just got on top. And I was really surprised how the grappling dynamic worked in that fight. But, like, if you had to give yourself an overall note for that fight, what would it be?
I'd probably say try and keep it standing a little longer. I wanted to strangle him a bit more, but honestly, his grappling, I thought it'd be a little bit better, to be honest, but I knew my grappling was good too, so. It is, you know, but, like, I did want to keep it standing a little longer, but.
Were you surprised in any way by his striking? Because I feel like he was kind of hitting heavy, man. It felt like he was hitting hard.
So in the my training camp, I was training with bigger guys, a lot bigger guys, and I didn't really train with anyone my size or smaller. So the speed difference, when I got into the fight, there was a big gap because, bigger guys can't really throw as fast. So when I got into the fight, he got me a couple times with an overhand. I think it was an overhand, a right overhand. And he caught me on the eye a couple times. But I wasn't really fazed by it. But he did catch me. I'm going to admit, he did catch me. So it was good. It was good.
When when you guys are fighting, it's kind of a blur sometimes. Like, things are happening and you're not really, like, you guys are so in the moment that you can't really look and say, oh, okay, I think I won that round. I think he won that round. And in the third round, what was your feeling like going into the third? Did you think it was 1-1? Did you think he was winning? You were winning? What was your read?
No, I felt like I was winning both rounds. They were close. They were close rounds, but I did feel like I was winning both rounds going to the third. And the first, I think it was the first round. The first round when I was in side control. And I landed a bunch of elbows to his, I think, to his ribs. I knew that took some wind out of him. So that was one of the goals I had, just to kind of tire him out, because I knew I had good cardio. I knew I would last three rounds. But that's what I wanted to do going to third round, just to wind him. And then third round, try to take him out.
And it worked out pretty well, man. You were able to take the back, sink in the rear naked choke. And for myself, I probably think it was – I feel like the second round was really, really close. I feel like the first one, since you landed the great sweep, you took a top position a couple of times, you landed good strikes. I feel like you really won the first round. The second was really, really close. So I didn't really know which side it was going. And the thing is, too, that he was mainly landing, like, he was initiating the grappling most of the times. And I feel like sometimes that weighs a lot. It depends where you're at, but sometimes it weighs a lot in on the judges' scorecards. Like, oh, look, this guy is going for the takedown. Is even if when you're down, you're kind of the guy that's having the upper end, like we've been saying. So I was really wondering, like, oh, what was the score and all that going to the third? And I felt like it was probably 1-1. You never know with these judges. So, man, how about it? You just got the job done, and we never got to see what they thought. And I feel like that's probably the best option for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think second round, I'm not sure. I think he got two takedowns he had on me in second round?
Yep, I believe. I didn't get to rewatch the fight. I was there live, but I didn't rewatch the fight since. So I don't remember like in detail what happened, but I know that the second round was way closer than the first one.
The second was closer. But even then, I still feel like I won the second round, so... if it did go to judges, then I feel like I would have had that fight.
Yeah, for sure. But it didn't, so you're all good. Yep. And now what's next, man? Now, before that. How was it with? Yeah, I know it's pro debut. How was it with all the restrictions and stuff? Because I know it was my first event. Post COVID, let's say like that. I don't think we're really post it, but it was my first event after the pandemic, and like it was special. Usually we get to walk around a little more, speak to the fighters and all stuff. I feel like the commission was keeping it really, really tight. The guys at BTC, they couldn't do like much to let us go around and stuff. So I was wondering on the fighter side, how was it like with all these restrictions and stuff?
It was kind of weird because when we had the weigh-ins, the press, the commission was saying that the fighters couldn't stay after the fight and to watch it, which was kind of weird to me because we're already there fighting, you know?
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Like, it's a pandemic, so there's not much you can really say or do, but getting to fight was just great. Like, I'm happy that we're allowed to finally fight in Ontario, so it was awesome.
Yep. Was that the goal, to make your pro debut at that moment, or like, because you probably didn't fight during the pandemic, right?
No.
Before then you were an amateur. Were there like intentions to do more amateur fights and like you couldn't, so you went pro, or was it like according to plan?
So before the pandemic, I had one amateur fight in New York in December, right before the pandemic, and then I wanted to get about two more and then go pro, but pandemic hit and everything got shut down. But I was still training. I was still doing like an underground type of training.
I think we all did.
Yeah.
We can't stop, man. Come on.
Exactly. But I wanted to do two more amateur fights. That didn't end up happening. And then, I was like 2 years passed. So I'm like, man, I already got in a lot of training. Might as well just go pro, because two fights isn't really much, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, when you're close to it, you better just go, man, because when will there be amateur fights?
I don't even know.
Yeah, because I don't know in the States. Maybe they got things, but I know it's kind of complicated to go there and do stuff over there for fighters. And I know you fought for MFL around here, the Maz promotion. He did shows during the pandemic. He did two shows in the same place. I believe that the shows are always on the Indian reservation in Oka, but... like, he hasn't booked any shows since. So, man, it's tough for people like that. Like, they're close to making the pro jump. Maybe like you, they wanted to have a little more experience as an amateur, and it's just tough. But like you've been saying, you were close to it and you trained for 2 years in the gym. So even though you didn't get the chance to do proper fights, like your experience went up, your skills went up, everything went up during the pandemic. So do you feel like it was a time where you got to work on other stuff? Because I know sometimes, like when you're fighting, you're in training camp, you're working on like getting in fight shape, all this stuff. But when you have no fight coming, is the time to just go into the gym and just do stuff. Just, oh, I'm gonna try that, I'm gonna try, and add little wrinkles to your game that you didn't really have the chance to train while you were in training camp. Is that something that happened with you?
Oh yeah, for sure. So when I'm not in training camp, I'm doing like I'm working on my technique and like my craft. I'm not really training hard, because when you're in training camp, it's more of like a conditioning, like a pace thing, you know. So in training camp, I don't really work on technique and that kind of stuff. I work on more like speed and conditioning. And then when I'm out of training camp, when I don't have a fight, I'm working on like my skill set. So that's what I was doing a lot before I got this fight. I was just working on my skills.
Yep, and now it's time. I tried to ask you before, but I went to other places. But now, what's next? What do you want to do next? I know there are BTC shows coming. There are probably other shows coming too. People are resuming MMA activity in Canada. We've got one coming up in Quebec too. I know Unified, all these people, they resume their activities. So what's next for Nate Smalla? What can we expect from you?
I'm definitely gonna fight for BTC again. I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you this, but they're having a bantamweight tournament.
Yeah, the tournament. That's what I wanted to know. Will you be in it?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely in that.
Oh, let's go.
Of course.
Yeah, and it's gonna be, I think it's gonna be a good one. They were talking about the two brothers, the Atme brothers, that were gonna be in that one. They got plenty. I think 135 is one of the biggest divisions in Canada and one of the most deep divisions. So
yeah, they got a lot of guys. They got a lot of guys. I'm hoping to fight one of those brothers, to be honest. I'm
hoping to. Yeah, that would be a one to really test your striking for sure, man.
Yeah, see what they got.
Oh, man, that's exciting. Yeah. That's exciting, man. So, hey, man, I thank you a lot for taking the time. I'm gonna let you with the last word. Anything you want to say, shout out some people, some sponsors, anything you have on your mind, the floor is yours, man.
I just want to shout out my team for helping me get prepared for this fight. My friends, my family for supporting me, the ones who came to the fight, the ones who watched it, the fans who were there, who watched it. Just, I got love and respect for everyone.
Yeah, for sure. And man, I encourage everybody to check you out, Nate Small. I'll put your Instagram in the description. It's Nate, is it double underscore small?
Yeah,
I feel like your underscore is big, so it's a double one.
Yeah, double.
So Nate double underscore small on Instagram. Check him out. Very exciting fighter. Like I said, he has one of the best Canadian fight this year under his belt, and it was his first one. So what's next for the future? We don't know, but we got to be excited for that. And a BTC tournament near you soon enough. I hope I'll get to be there, man, because yeah. I believe that the Quebec event is on the 19th of November, and that one is on the 20th, and it's in St. Catharines, which is really, really far away, but that would be a great weekend, though, to watch an event in Montreal and just go to Ontario and watch that. That tournament is really exciting, man. I want to see it, so yeah. I encourage everybody to follow Nate Small, Nate double underscore small on Instagram. Thanks a lot for taking the time, man. It's really appreciated, and we'll be looking forward to the future, man. I feel like we've got an exciting fighter on our end. So,
yeah, thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure, my man. Anytime you want to say something, call somebody out, just speak, just text me, and you always got a place on the podcast, man.
For sure, for sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, take care.
We're back, and we are with the one and the only Jean-Luc Harrison. What's up, man?
Oh, not too much. You? How's it going?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. I'm happy to have you on today because you finally made your pro debut, man. How is it feeling now? You're a pro fighter. You won. How you feel?
Well, I feel great. You know, do martial arts for quite a bit of time, so feels pretty good to finally say I do it professionally.
Yeah, for sure, man. So, first time I met your coach, Jordy. He was at a TKO show with Bobby Sullivan, and we were talking about Bobby, about him, and about other people. And he told me, I got a guy, he's going to make his amateur debut soon. He's pretty good. And he was talking about you. So I kind of followed your amateur career a little bit through Jordy. And then you had signed with TKO back in 2019, ready to make your pro debut then. So how was it that almost 2 years wait, like waiting to get to finally make your pro debut?
Yeah, it was kind of a struggle, you know, with the whole COVID thing, and there was some other stuff that made the TKO fight fall through. But, you know, now that it finally happened, there's a little bit of a relief, you know, that I'm able to do it again, fight again. So that's good.
How did you like it with, like, I know there was lots of restrictions to add the event. It was, like, more complicated than usual, I'd say. So how did you find it, like, the whole experience? Did you think it was, like, that you maybe missed something from a normal event? Or was it all the same for you?
For me, it was still business as usual. I felt like BTC ran it as smooth as they could, considering everything was going on. They were very professional, and I appreciated that. But yeah, for me, it's just another fight.
It was, yeah, it's true that they did really well. To be honest, I think it was probably a nightmare to organize that card. Like, so many restrictions, things going on, and like limits on almost everything. But like you said, it ran through really well. It was a smooth sailing. Fights were great. Everything went well. So now that we've spoken about all of that, how do you feel about your performance, man? 1 week removed from the fight, how did you feel about that fight?
There's some things, like, I kind of was a little sloppy. Like, I got mount right away, and then I let it go. Great on Keanu for escaping mount, but, you know, I felt I should have held on to it better. And, like, I slipped in the first exchange, and then he slipped. But, you know, we're both making our pro debut, so we got a little wild in there, I guess. But, yeah, I got to work on checking those calf kicks. I was surprised with those. Those were the first time I ever ate calf kicks with a bear shin, which was something else. So,
are you happy with your performance?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, how can you be upset with the first round finish?
Yeah.
But, like, I'm very critical. I want to do the best I can. And I felt, you know, there were some things I could work on. So I'm going to look at the things I can work on rather than the things I did well, right? That's the way you improve.
Yeah, no, for sure. But to be honest, it was a great performance, man. I think you can be proud of it. You did really well. You, like you said, you're not happy that you lost mount, but that's like details, man. You just basically dominated the guy on the ground, landed some good shots, forced him to give his back. And, like, I know that's your bread and butter. You're a good grappler. You mostly won your fights by submission. So that was, like, I think the perfect way for you to start your pro career. So you got it. Small things here and there that you say, oh, I could work on this, I could work on that. But at least you came out with the win. That's the most important, I believe.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
So you said that was a 145 fight, right?
Yeah, I fought all my fights at 145.
Okay, so that's your division.
Yeah, that's where I want to stay. I feel good there. It's not a huge cut, but it's still a decent cut, so I don't feel small.
So what's next for you, man?
I'm thinking, like, early next year I'll probably fight again, and I might do some grappling competitions to keep me busy until then. But yeah, early next year, I think we plan on taking another fight.
Are you still under contract with BTC?
Yeah.
Yep. Do you guys have some people that you love to fight, or because I don't really know who's in that division? It's a weird division in Canada, 145, because I feel like there's many people that are starting their pro careers now that are fighting at that weight. But if you look like at the experienced guy in this division, there's maybe like two or three guys in the country that have more than 10 fights.
Yeah, I think like in the coming months, in the coming years, everyone's going to kind of make their debuts and have good showings, and then we'll see what's what. Like with the past year and a half, COVID shut everything down. So I think now that things are opening up again, we're going to see the featherweight division start opening up and a lot of newcomers come in, and a new era in the featherweight of Canada is going to come up pretty shortly. So
yeah, for sure, man. And like this year, it may be the year that there has been like the most pro debuts in a while, man. Like if you look at every event, either BTC or the ones that Unified or BFL did, there's like so many people that just made their pro debut this year. It's like the old generation of amateur fighters that were kind of ready to make the pro jump before the pandemic, and now that it's starting to, the action starting to resume, all these people are making their pro debuts. And like we've saw on that BTC card, man, I feel like for people all making their debuts, the level was pretty high, man. Like even the guys that lost, they were good. They were good in position. There were some back and forth fights. There were some good performances. So I feel like more than ever, there's like a crop of guys that are super ready to make their pro debut.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you there. So I'm excited. I kind of want to see how people show up and who's coming up first before I make any call outs. Just because, like you said, I don't know too much who's here for the featherweight division, but I think once things start opening up and there's some names, you know, I'm pretty much ready to go for anybody. I'm excited, so we'll see.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to see. So I think Nate Small's a 35er. I'm on Tapology right now. Just there's that guy. Oh yeah, that could be a good fight for you. That guy that trains at the BTC Training Center, Dylan McElvin. That could be a good one for you, man.
Yeah. I don't think I've heard of him before, but I gotta keep up to date with all the Canadian fighters. So
yeah, that could be a good one. Either him or Oren Anscombe. I think he's a guy from Alberta. Yeah, there have been some names. There have been some names recently. So that's a good one. So what was the training looking like? Like in your area first, where are you from in Ontario? Like really?
So I live in Port Elgin right now. So it's about 3 hours from Toronto. It's fairly rural, like a lot of farms, a lot of cows and stuff. Like there's not much going on around here, but still get good training in.
And you train in that town too?
Yep.
Okay. So like, how was it, man? Cause I know here in Quebec, like there was some restrictions for everybody and stuff, but like really the places that were touched were like the Quebec City area, the Montreal area, but some places more country, more on the rural side, they didn't have like much cases, much anything. So they were able to keep on a kind of normal life. So how was it for you?
Like the throughout the year and a half, like the restrictions would be lifted and then they'd come back and we'd do what we could throughout. Like you said, Jordy's my main coach. He has a home gym, so me and him would be kind of in each other's social bubble, so we could still get good training in with each other and get good grappling rounds in with each other. So no matter what, I was getting training in. But now that things are opening up again, I can get more rounds with different people and kind of mix and match a little more and get different looks, which is nice.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. It helps a lot, but yeah, man, Jordy's such a guy too. Huh? He's always this guy's always training, always like working on new stuff. He likes to like post his videos of him doing pads, doing stuff. So you know, he's always like he really likes it. He's really passionate about that stuff. So yeah, it's a good guy to be around for sure, man. And he's a super cool guy too. So
yeah, he's awesome. Like, there's not many people like him around. So without him, I don't know how far I'd get. So I'm really appreciative of him being there for me. So, yeah.
No, man, he's a good guy. I really like him. I was happy that I got to see him at the show. We didn't get to, like, walk around much. It was cool to see fights, but it was complicated for our part. Like, we couldn't really move around and talk to the fighters like that. The commission were keeping, like, a really, really tight ship. And I think they couldn't really control what was happening in the crowd. So I guess they tried to really control everything else that was happening. So I guess that's okay with the restrictions, but... What do you want, man? So, do you have any final things to say? Is there some things that I forgot that you want to talk about? Anything? I'm leaving you the final word here.
No, I'm just looking forward to things to come. I'm excited, right? Made my pro debut and got the victory. So I think there's good things coming up for me and I'm excited.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really excited too, man, to see what's next for you. I feel like we talked, it's a division that there's more and more names that are starting to crowd it, and you can really be the one that is able to pull out of that group if you keep having good performances like that. So thanks a lot for coming, Jean-Luc. I'm very happy, and anytime if you have something to say, just hit me up. Always got a place on the podcast for you, my man.
All right, awesome. Thank you, Faber.
Thank you, man.